حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل نعم المولى ونعم النصير أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد
اللهم صل على محمد
وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين We are going to go off our topic for today so that we can speak about the occasion and this day, which is very important for all believers. And if it's not, then it should be important. As it is a sign of a mu'min, from the words of Imam Hasan al-Askari alayhi salam. Who in speaking about the signs of a mu'min has said that he is the one who does the ziyarat of Arba'in. And just that, it being a sign of a mu'min, shows that a person on this day remembers Imam Hussein alayhi salam, he remembers the martyrdom, he remembers the sacrifice, he remembers the mission, he remembers the tragedies that fell upon Ahlul Bayt after Ashura, he remembers the wishes and the yearning of those widows, of those orphans who were not able to cry for their dead, who were not able to mourn, and they had that wish that one day they will go back, and one day they will cry, and one day they will mourn the martyrs the way they should have been mourned, and give them the respect that they should have given the respect. And this wish, you see, translates into the hearts of believers. And that's why this yearning is there for each and every mu'min, that the place to be in Arba'in is next to Aba Abdullah al-Hussein. The place to be in Arba'in is in Karbala. Fortunate are those who are there. Really, we, with this yearning that we have, from here, from wherever we are, we'll make this ziyarat and we will give this respect. One of the things that note, my friends, before we go on, is that this love you have for Hussein, I want you to see the source of this love. If you think that you are here in these majalis because you love Hussein, then you are wrong. You're not here because you love Hussein. If we think that we are that good that we could love Imam Hussein and this is our, this love emanates from us, it is a mistake. Most people, most mu'mineen and most believers truly don't know where this emanates from. If they do, then their love will grow. We're not here because we love Imam Hussein. You are here because Imam Hussein loves you.
Salawat par Muhammad
wa ala Muhammad.
It is his love for you that pulls us here. He's the one who loved you. He's the one who cared about you. It is his love that pulls us here. We're not the ones. We're just reacting to his love. And this is something that should be kept in mind. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala
Muhammad.
There are two dimensions that we have as individuals and as a society. There's one dimension that pulls us or takes us to the goals that we have been created for. And there's one dimension in us that fulfills the desires, the faculty of shahwat that we have. The dimension that inclines us towards the purpose of our life, this dimension is called fitrat. Fitrat is that dimension in our ruh that inclines us to achieving the purpose for which we have been created for. Anytime you see you have an inclination towards that which fulfills the purpose of your creation, then this is a fitri inclination. This is a inclination of our nature, of our fitrat. Now our nature has another dimension that fulfills the needs of our desires, needs of our physical being, of our life in dunya, and this is called tabi'at. Tabi'at is that dimension which inclines us to fulfill the needs we have in this dunya. And that's why you see, for example, everything that has to do with our desires, fulfilling our desires, everything that has to do with our comfort and our yearning for comfort, everything that has to do with ease and looking for ease, everything that has to do with entertainment, that we entertain ourselves, we take some time off. Entertainment is not wrong. In fact, looking at the words of the Quran, the life of this world is entertainment. It is a game. And so that also is a need to be fulfilled, and that needs are fulfilled by the inclination of tabi'at. From this tabi'at, the outcome of tabi'at is culture. What we call culture that every nation has is an outcome of their tabi'at, their national need to fulfill their desires or their life in this world. This is called tabi'at. Fitrat is our inclination to achieve our purpose, to achieve the goals that we have been created for. If you have understood that, then we see that every human being, when you want to look at him, where his progress is, it is known through these two dimensions. Is he progressing in his fitrat or is he progressing in his tabi'at? Does he advance in his nature, in his inclination towards his purpose, or does he advance towards his inclination towards his tabi'at? Most people who ignore fitrat, they end up following their tabi'at by default. And that's why you see that the world, the progress it has made, the advancement it has made, is not in terms of their fitrat. It has made progress in terms of their tabi'at. All the comforts that you see, the housing you see, the shelter and the clothing and all of these things fall under that. You see how much the world has advanced in that. We have advanced in that. And that's why you see them like building big houses, big buildings, great roads. All of these things are a fulfillment of their tabi'at, not their fitrat. And when they follow their tabi'at and ignore their fitrat, then they have big buildings. But the people who live in them are not big. It is the inclination of fitrat that makes us big people, great people. We become great by following our inclination of fitrat. This is what's important. That's why you see in the past, People used to have small homes, meaning they lived in huts. Their homes were small, but the people who lived in them were big people. Now you have big homes, but the people who live in them are small people. They haven't grown up. And that's why, by looking at the advancement that we see in the world right now and the progress that we see in the world right now, it has nothing to do with fitrat. A statement I remember from Ayatollah Misbah Yazdi, that he mentioned this in explaining something related to this, but this statement was so true. He said that the world has advanced to such an extent that we have learned to walk on the moon. We have learned to reach the moon, but we haven't learned yet how to live on the earth. What's the use of walking on the moon when you don't know how to live on the earth yet? The place that you're living, you're not here. Here you can't live together. You don't know how to deal with each other. And you have gone all the way there. So what is this progress? This progress is tabi'at. It's not fitrat. The progress that has to be made is in our fitrat. That is what makes us great. That is what makes us big. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. When a people, when a nation, an individual or a nation, if they follow their tabiat and ignore their fitrat, then what happens is their conscience dies. Their conscience dies. Really, this is how, when we look at news and we see many people being killed, and all these people are being ravagely killed, violently killed in so many places, we look at it and to us it's like statistics. Oh, 60 died there, or 70 died there. What is happening here? I mean, if a person can know the value of one human life, then if one person dies, it would be devastating for the whole society. But because the fitrat hasn't grown, the only thing that has grown is tabi'at, now we see the amount of death that is happening, and still it's like just a news clip in the evening news. We listen to it and we say, oh, that's so sad. And we go on with our life. That's how it is. We see the news, for example, oh, you know what, 60 people died in this julus, for example. They say, oh, that is so bad. And we take a sip of our chai. What is going on here? The idea is that really, where is our fitrat? That if one person dies, we should be devastated by it. That we should really look into that and say, this is wrong. This is completely wrong. The reason is, my friends, in our fitrat we are not growing. We are not pursuing the fitra to achieve our objectives as human beings. We are not becoming big people. We are remaining small people in big homes. And what Islam wants is for you to grow in fitrat. Really, what is more important? And I want you to understand this and understand it in the right way. Yes, you know, here's the thing. One of the signs of Akhirat Zaman is the fact that, you know, you have heard this before, one of the signs of Akhirat Zaman and before the Zuhur of the Imam is the fact that people will have big masjids that are adorned and everything, but the people in them will have no iman. In Islam also, in Islamic terms also, we label tabiat as fitrat and follow tabiat. Not just you. For example, even amongst people, let's say, you know, like for example, Maulanas, right? Obviously, they don't go after, you know, worldly things in such sense. To them, you know, yeah, the masjid is their home, right? But when the masjid becomes their home, they make tabiat their purpose. And so what happens, now you see when they speak to each other, they're like, oh, you know what, I have 500 people in my masjid. Oh, you only have 300? I have 500. What is this? Really? I mean, if we really look at it from the fitri angle, from the eyes of fitrat, the real question should be, amongst those 1,000, how many you think are ready to die for Imam Hussein? How many of you think are ready to die for Imam Hussein, would give everything for Imam Hussein? If they can't even give their homes, you think they'll give their lives? And homes is wajib on them, it's not even their money. Homes, 1/5 of their savings, they're unable to give. And they have a hard time giving. And even when they're pushed to give, they want to make sure that, you know what, I want to make sure where it's spent. But it's not your money to think about it. That's going to be decided by the imam or his naib. He's going to decide that. It's not even your money. It's like, for example, you tell the IRS, listen, you're taking my income tax, but I want to make sure where you spend it. The idea is that it's not your money in the first place. So now what happens is, if we are not ready to give up the imam's money to him, then how are we going to give our lives for Imam Hussein? The idea of fitrat growth, and growth in fitrat, my friend, comes when we start looking at our growth and say that, you know what, if I have one person who's ready, and who's ready to sacrifice, and he does sacrifice everything for the imam, that is more important than million people who are making noises. Imam Hussein did not need the 40,000 who came to battle him. All he needed was the 72 who were with him. Those were important for Imam Hussein. Those were precious for Allah. It's those who are precious. When Hur was on the other side and was looking at Imam Hussein, just imagine what he was looking at. He was just looking at a small band of people. He was looking at them. And to him, his life was built around these thousands of men who were under him. His life, his mission, his respect, his honor, everything was built around that. His name, his fame, everything. He gave importance to that because he followed tabiat. But when he understood what fitrat was and he crossed over to the other side and he looked back at the thousands now. Now those same thousands that had meaning for him before became like faceless, useless people who looked, he looked at them and said, these are the people for which I lived my life. That I thought was important. I used to pay attention to what they would say to me. These people, these thousands became meaningless for him. They became meaningless. He looked at them and they had no meaning for him. He just looked at them. He says, you, and I live my life for you all. When a person starts looking at fitrat, from the angle of fitrat, then his view changes as what he gives importance to. What he gives importance to. Just like individuals, there are societies that have these dimensions. Either a society is, a community is living to pursue their tabi'at, or they're living to pursue their fitrat. What am I, what are we as a group, what as we as a community trying to pursue? Our fitrat or our tabi'at? Really, when we want Imam-e-Zaman and we want to be with him, he is looking for people who have pursued their fitrat and have grown in their fitrat. That's what he's looking for. Not people, you know, who have a great culture and great civilization and all of these things. That doesn't matter to him. Have you achieved the goals that Allah has made for you? Have you followed your fitrat? Keeping that in mind, now I want you to understand, my friends, that certain places, in certain communities, in certain nations, when we look at Karbala, you see it brought out these different people in all of their forms. It brought out these different groups of people. The people who came to, you know, for example, fight the imams We're not the same people. And this is the mistake we make. We just, what we do is that we just limit Imam Hussein's movement to Yazid and the people of Yazid. And the people of Yazid. No. You had the people of Sham, then you had the people of Kufa. And these two were different. And I want you to see the difference between the two. The people of Sham was a different psychology than the people of Kufa. And if we can note that, let me explain that if you send a salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
You see, the people of Sham were people who learned Islam, were Muslims, used to pray and do everything, but they learned Islam from Muawiyah. Their teacher was Muawiyah. In fact, the father figure was Muawiyah. He was everything, the whole and soul to them. They accepted Islam at his hand. They grew up knowing him. They learned Islam from him. Whatever he taught, they learned and practiced. In their hearts, they wanted to obey Allah, and they saw Muawiyah as their leader. They heard that, yes, there's a prophet who came, but this is the naib of the prophet. You have to follow him. Really. As opposed to Kufans, who knew about Ahlul Bayt, who knew about Imam Ali, who learned from him also. They have a very clear idea who he was, and still they refused to obey them. They refused to be a part of them. You see these two different things. In other words, the people of Sham understood that Muawiyah is the naib of the Prophet, and they were 100% with him. Because he's the naib of the Prophet, and that's why we need to be 100% with him. In fact, when you look at it, the people of Sham were the true Wilayatis. They were the true Wilayatis. They accepted that the Wilayat that the Prophet has is now with Muawiyah. And they took him and they went with him 100%. Imam Ali confirmed that. He said that listen, the people of Muawiyah, they believe in him more, they follow him more than my own people do. He mentioned that, and it's true. They had that. Why? Because they learned from Muawiyah, and that's all they knew about Islam. This is what they knew. They didn't know who Ahlul Bayt were. They didn't hear the hadith regarding Ahlul Bayt. In fact, when you mention to them, say, who are they? And you know that Muawiyah also did his best to make sure that he portrays Ahlul Bayt, he portrays Imam Ali in the worst form possible. For my children, those who don't know, right? The adults know that, so that you know this history very well. You know how Muawiyah turned people against Imam Ali? What he used to do is gimmicks like these. He would ask everyone to give their children pets. Pets. Like a cat or a parrot or something like that. Pets. And people will give their children pets. And then when they get close to them, when they endear themselves to those pets, then the children, right? So then he will get those pets killed. Now obviously for a child, when he loses his pet, it's devastating. Because, he loves the pet, whether it's a cat or something, they start to cry. They get devastated by that, right? Now when they're devastated and they said, how did my pet die? How did this animal that I love so much die? Then Muawiyah said to the parents, tell them that Imam Ali killed them. That Imam Ali killed it. And so those children grew up having a hatred for Imam Ali. Hatred for Imam Ali. And these were the same people who are in Sham now as adults. So when the caravan Imam Hussein came to Sham, they looked at them as people who are despised, people who are rebels, just people who are completely anti-Islam. That's how they looked at them. But the people of Kufa were different. The people of Kufa knew Imam Ali. Imam Ali ruled in Kufa. People learned from Imam Ali. Imam Ali used to speak to them, just like he, in fact, he was the resident alim of Kufa. He used to speak to them. They used to learn from him. People used to learn from Hazrat Zainab. Women used to go and take classes from her. They all knew them so well. So my friends, understand this. See the difference in people. People of Sham and people in Kufa. And when you look at the difference, you see Ahlul Bayt. Really, Imam Sajjad or Hazrat Zainab, in all the speeches they gave in Kufa and Sham, you see that in Kufa, in Sham, they never blamed the people of Sham. It's because of you we died. They never said that to the people of Sham. Because they didn't know who Ahlul Bayt were. They didn't have marifat of Ahlul Bayt. How can you blame them? They were victims of ignorance. Forced ignorance on them. How can you blame them? That's why they never blamed the people of Sham. Look at the speeches. Look at the speeches that Hazrat Zainab gave. He never said, oh, you are responsible for this. But in Kufa, you see, when they entered Kufa, this is what Imam Sajjad and Hazrat Zainab were saying all along. You are responsible for what happened to us, not Yazid. It doesn't mean that Yazid wasn't responsible, but they wanted to see what this means. And I want you to understand what this means very well. Send a salawat. My friends, who did Imam Hussein, who was he trying to fight? Who was he trying to expose? You know, obviously he stood up because Yazid became the ruler and he said that Yazid should not be a ruler. He's incapable of that. He's not worthy of this. That Muslims should be under such a person who's an alcoholic, who's an adulterer, fornicator, gambler. I mean, just a low life, right? Yes, he said these things. He said, but who was he really trying to fight? Who was he trying to expose? This is a mistake for us to think that he's trying to expose Yazid. It's a mistake for us to think that. Why would Imam Hussein want to expose Yazid? Yazid was already exposed. Everyone who knew who Yazid was, they all knew who he was. You know, Imam Hussein met Yazid once. Right? He met him once. One time, Yazid was brought to Medina to be introduced to the people in the time of Muawiyah. When Muawiyah was alive, he sent Yazid as the prince, you know, and the heir of the throne, so he can be introduced to the Muslim Ummah, the next in line, the Khalifa and all these things, right? And obviously they were not saying it openly, because the agreement between Imam Hassan and Muawiyah was that he should not appoint an heir. So he wasn't saying it openly. So what he did is that in a campaign to introduce Yazid to the Ummah, to the nation, he sent Yazid to Medina and a gathering was held and all the elders of Medina were invited. The leaders, the elders, the ulama, and all these people were invited to come and meet Yazid. Now Yazid, as was his habit, he could not leave drinking. So before the gathering started, Yazid got drunk. He was totally wasted. And the advisors who came with him obviously are smart, intelligent, you know, expert politicians. And they knew that, listen, we can't present Yazid like this. You know, he's completely out, right? So they did their best, you know, to get him and, you know, washed him up, cleaned him up, you know, put different clothes on him so that they said, listen, you don't even need to talk. Just sit in place. Just sit in one place. You know, they put like perfume on him, you know, so that it doesn't smell like alcohol. I mean, you know, when you get drunk, you smell like alcohol, right? So they did their best to get him ready. And
propped him up on the stage so that all the elders can come and meet him. So these elders, you know, slowly they were coming and they were meeting him. And they recognized, you know, they smelled, you know, alcohol, you know. People knew how alcohol smelled. So they smelled alcohol. No one would dare say anything, right? Because obviously you say something, then you'll be whisked off and, you know, it won't be found again. So they all knew that this is Yazid, the son of Muawiyah, the emperor, the, you know, the Khalifa, right? So they didn't say anything. Everyone was like, okay, they met him and went down, met him, went down. When Imam Hussein came to the gathering, when he came there, he smelled the alcohol and right away, he started to protest. He says, what kind of an insult is this that you bring us to this person who is drunk? This is an insult for the Muslims. You bring us here to this person and he is drunk? They said, no, he's not drunk. Now, obviously, Imam Hussein said, I can smell the alcohol from him. I can smell the alcohol from him. And the advisors were trying to make up, no, this is a new perfume from Africa. From Ethiopia, it's a new perfume. Come on. You know? Imam Hussein said, Imam Hussein was upset. He says, do not cover up for his actions. You know, for his wrongdoings. He's drunk and you have insulted Muslims. Now, Yazid was an impatient person. I mean, he's a prince. He lived in lavish life. And really, he doesn't have patience. So right away, he just got, you know, I mean, he said, you know, the heck with this. Bring out the alcohol. Bring out the alcohol. Bring out the wine. You know, and his slaves, you know, they brought the wine, you know, this and that. He poured the wine in a glass and offered it to Imam Hussein. Here, have some. Imam Hussein just turned around and walked away. My friends, Imam Hussein did not need to expose Yazid. Really? Why would he need to expose Yazid? For everyone knew who Yazid was. They all seen it with their own eyes. They all witness what kind of a low life is Yazid. You don't need to expose such a guy. So who was Imam Hussein trying to bring out and fight? This is very important, my friends, for us to understand. And I want you all to understand this today. Because it's so important, it helps us so much to know truth from falsehood and what Imam Hussein was trying to do. Because when we understand who actually Imam Hussein was trying to expose, and he did, then this is a lesson that we can learn from Karbala. If you send the salawats.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
You know, there were many groups amongst the Muslims that Imam Ali confronted. He came out and he fought them. Different groups of people. They were the people who came to the Battle of Jamal that Imam Ali, you know, brought them out and exposed them for the wrong that they did, which is betraying the bay'at and the allegiance they took to Imam Ali. He brought them out in the Battle of Jamal and he exposed them. And those people, that Muawiyah who was in the background doing all the plots that he could in order to cause fitna, he brought out Muawiyah and Siffin. And he exposed Muawiyah. He also exposed Muawiyah for what he is. Then of course, then you had those heretics called the Khawarij. He exposed them also. These were different groups of people that Imam Ali confronted and he exposed them. But there was one group that Imam Ali could not get to. Imam Ali could not get to those people. It was really one of those people. Imam Ali was not able to reach those people. He could not get to them because these people were in hiding. They did not come out openly and it was very hard to bring them out. But these people were the basis for all these other groups and these other tyrants. And Imam Ali knew that, but he didn't have the circumstances to bring them out. He could not do it. Imam Hassan also could not do it. They're the ones who put Imam Hussein in, or Imam Hassan in that situation he was. forced him to make a treaty with Moabia. These were the people, but they were in hiding. Before I say who those people in that group was, just one thing I want to say, something that, you know, really, that we get into and we lose track and we don't see the enemy where he is, really. And that thing is, my friends, is this. When we want to see who the enemy is, one of the methods of the enemy nowadays, you see it's happening, is what they do is that they make a fake enemy for you. They make a fake enemy for you. The enemy makes it. They say, this is your enemy. And we now pull all our resources together and start to target this fake enemy. You know, it's like a shadow. A shadow that you never see. You don't even know where it is. It's a shadow. And you run after it. You go after it. But that's not your real enemy. The real enemy is doing what it has to do. And it's going on oppressing. It's going on killing. It's going on doing all the massacres and all the wrongdoings and causing fitna. They just go on doing that. And here we are running after this. So now what happens is that when you ask, you know, who is your enemy? Now, instead of looking at reality and looking at those who are actually doing the wrong, now we make up. We don't make up. We follow the things that they made up for us. So if you ask a young Shia who is interested in Shia Islam, who's religious and who reads, he doesn't read books. He just reads things on Facebook, you know. You know, that's where he gets his Islam from, you know, Facebook. So this Hujjat al-Islam Facebook, when it teaches him, you know, about Islam, and this is like everywhere, you see that, who are our enemies? You see, right away they come up with these names, Illuminatis, the Freemasons. Now who are these Freemasons? These are some hidden guys who are controlling everything from the top. And we are like, wow, so those are the real enemies. And we now focus on them and try to fight them and try to, you know, raise awareness amongst people about this shadow that we call an enemy. And the real enemy is doing whatever we are alleging that these people do. What do these people do? They cause fitna. They kill Muslims. They bomb Muslims. They are doing this. They are doing that. So all of these lists that you have, these superpowers are doing it openly. They're doing it openly, you know. And we are saying, who's the one killing? The Illuminatis. Who are the Illuminatis? We don't know. We are running after this ghost. This is some of the absurdities that the enemy makes us follow. And here we are running after these hidden people who don't know. Like, for example, how the West has made up this Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda. What is Al-Qaeda? Oh, this is a group of this and that, and they are doing this and they are doing that. So where are they? Where are they? Who are they? Oh, they are the ones who are doing this and that, this and that. You see, my friends, understand this. This is a ghost that is made up. They're, you know, really, who's Al-Qaeda? It's just a wing of you. You are the ones doing it, and you want us to now go after these people. No. You are already openly doing it. You are already openly killing Muslims. Look at Israel. It's openly killing Muslims without any doubt. Why do we need a hidden enemy when we have an open enemy who's doing these things? You see, this is the enemy's way of distracting our attention to this. So when I say this group of people, they're not a hidden group of people that are secretive or some secret society of people who are pulling the strings from the top. That is just a misnomer that we have that is really making us look foolish. Now when you talk about, you know, who your enemies are and you say Illuminati or Freemasons, people laugh at you. And we lose our own credibility for saying these type of things. Really, a lot of times we need to understand what's going on. You know, in the East Coast, amongst the Shias, right? You know, those who haven't been to California, you know, We heard about California from the member. Right? We heard about from the member. Let me tell you the story so you all can relate to it since you are from California also. Salawat ala Muhammad. You know, there was in a conference, one of the sheikhs got up there and he was trying to give example as to how foolish Western people are and how dumb they are, right? Now I'm in the audience with the rest of the people, we're listening, okay. And he gives an example from California that there's a town in California and in the election for the mayor of the town, there was a dog that stood up in the election. And he says the dog won the election. He says, look at these people, they have elected a dog as their mayor. Now, I am thinking that, wait a minute, you know, what's he talking about, you know? Wait a minute, what's he talking about? You know, you can't have a dog as a mayor, I mean, please. And he was now giving evidence, it's in the news, you know, and the news has reported this and this and that. Now, I said, you know, I mean, really, I mean, I felt bad for the sheikh because he's really, you know, at the end embarrassing himself, you know. So after this, you know, whole thing was over, right? I went to him and said, Mawlana, I mean, where did he get this source from? This and that. He says, there's a news article on the internet. You see this is there, you know. I went to the source of the news article and it was on onion.com. Onion.com is a website of satire. That's like made up stuff, you know, that they make up. He took it from there and he put it in the conference for everyone to hear. I'm like, what are you talking about? This is from onion.com. You know, this is the source of your story. A lot of times what happens is that we need to be careful because when we say things, we lose our credibility. When we say things, we have to say it accurately also. Because we usually end up making blanket statements. Really, we make up blanket statements about things. We have to be accurate about what we say. Because this is very important in making sure that when we do say important things, people have credibility in us. That when we say things, we should not make blanket statements. For example, we say, oh, Shias are like this. Oh, you know, these are traditional Shias and they're all like this. You just can't make a blanket statement like that. Really, this is where you lose your credibility. You have to be very accurate. Who was like this? Who said this? Where it said this? Why? Because what happened is that when you start to speak in these type of ways, then intelligent people don't listen to you. If you want just ignorant people who just want to be followers, then yes, you will always get them. You don't need to do this. You don't need to be a majlis. In fact, you'll get more people to come and join you if you do the Hare Rama Hare Krishna stuff. Yeah, just go and do the Hare Rama Hare Krishna in the mall and you'll see how many people join you. You know, I mean, really, if we just want foolish people just to come because they're ignorant and they're just followers, but intelligent people don't do these things. And they don't follow these things. And the issue is that we need to get those people who truly can come towards Imam Hussain, can understand him. Our invitation is for everyone, but when they come, you see, the people who come, the reason why Shia Islam is always under oppression is that because the people who come here will come here to their own conscience and knowing that this is the truth. If we can also become like the Ismailis and this and that and start offering incentive, or for example, these missionaries who go to these poor places in the world and say, look, we got a doctor for your teeth, you know, a dentist, you know, you never had a dentist, and they're like, oh, they're so good people, this and that. Is that how we want to promote our religion? Really, that's not the way it is. The people who come here, they come here in spite of knowing that they are going to be in trouble. And they come here knowing that this is the truth. It's like how Hur came to Imam Hussain. When Hur came to Imam, he knew he's going to die. But that decision is worth it. Right? Those who went to Yazid's side, their decision is not really worth it because they had life there here, right? You know, they were living and they'll get something in exchange. There's incentive there for going there. This is why, my friends, it's very important for us to identify enemies and know who the enemy is accurately. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala. The people that Imam Hussein was trying to expose was not Yazid, really. It wasn't the rulers, it wasn't the rich, or it wasn't any political group that existed there. But a group that was always involved with everything. But they were so sly and they were so smart that they never would let themselves be exposed. Imam Ali, if he had trouble, it was because of this group. Imam Hassan, if he had trouble, it was because of this group. And Imam Hussein knew, if I want to bring out this group, then this is not going to be easy. I have to bring them out though. Why? Because this group is the cause of all fitna and all the problems. What is that group of people that Imam Hussein was trying to expose? They don't have a name, they don't have a label. Right? They just go by the people. Yes, the people. Every tyrant who stands up, every wrongdoer who does wrong, stands up on the basis of the people. The people are with me. The people are with me. The people that Imam Hussein is trying to expose is that silent majority that's out there who, when wrong happens, they don't say anything. When injustice happens, they keep quiet. Those are the people that Imam Hussein was trying to expose. And he did that. You know how he did that, my friends? Look at all the Imams and look at Imam Hussein. Imam Hussein is unique. He is unique than all the Imams. Why? Because all of the Imams were killed by someone. Imam Hussein is the only Imam who was killed by the people. It's the people who came out to kill him. It's the masses that came out to kill him. No one person is responsible. Everyone came there to kill Imam Hussein. The people came to kill Imam Hussein. And that's what he wanted to show. He wanted to bring them out so that everyone knows from now onwards that if anyone has faith in me, if anyone loves me, if anyone understands me, then he will never give credibility, he will never give any sort of credence to anything that is based on the people. Because it's the people who are the wrongdoers. Is the people who are responsible. You the silent majority that stands there and doesn't say anything when the wrong is being done. You are responsible. The same people who, when they came to knock down the door of Hazrat Fatima, the same people, those people that stood by there and did not say anything about it. Do you think that if the people stood up, then these people, this group of people that came there to kick down the door of Hazrat Fatima, would dare to do that? They would never dare to do that. But it's the people's silence that empowered these people to do it. People are responsible, my friends. We do not absolve them of their crime. Anyone who believes in Imam Hussein does not absolve the people from their crime. If you believe in Imam Hussein, then it's the people who killed Imam Hussein. It's the people who did this to him. And now any system that's based on the people, we will say that no, this is anti-Imam Hussein. This is anti-Imam Hussein. It's based on the people. Nanda, why? Because the people killed Imam Hussein. Yazid didn't kill Imam Hussein. He wasn't even there. Yes, he's responsible for the crime. He was the one who offered gifts and promises and all that. That's why the people came out. But Imam Hussein wanted the people to come out. You are the ones on whom Muawiyah stood up and said, well, if I'm wrong, then why aren't the people speaking out? You see, this is the way, my friends. People. Subhanallah. It's the masses that killed Imam Hussein, not one person. Everyone came out to kill Imam Hussein. Really, they were taking turns in trying to kill Imam Hussein. They felt that it's a reward that they can go and kill Imam Hussein. One old person, didn't even have a sword or a horse, came to Karbala, you know, and he was so much inspired to kill Imam Hussein. He went to Umar ibn Sa'd and said, give me a sword so I can fight Imam Hussein. Give me a sword so I can fight Imam Hussein. And you know what Umar ibn Sa'd said? He said, listen, there is no sword. Just pick up stones, rocks, and throw it at him. You will get the same reward. You will get the same reward as if you're fighting with a sword. So he went and started picking up stones and throwing it at Imam Hussein. Really, my friends. This is, Imam Hussein really brought these people out. Come, all of you, come and fight me. Come and fight me. Because I want the world to know who is killing me. One person has beheaded Imam Hussein physically, but in reality, 40,000 did it. In reality, more than that. All of them came to kill Imam Hussein. So for us, my friends, when we look at this, we should not look at the people as anything respectful. No, they're not. Nothing based on the people is respectful in our eyes, if we are students of Karbala. La ilaha illallah. The month of Safar, it is said that on the first of Safar, the month of Safar is when the broken caravan of Imam Hussein entered Sham. It entered Sham there. And the second of Safar is when the caravan was brought into the court of Yazid. And the second of Safar. It says in the fifth of Safar, 5 days after it came to Sham, is when the Shahadat of Hazrat Sakina occurred. Now, Ahlul Bayt stayed there right after that, soon after that, with the people now standing up and saying some things. The public opinion now changing, the Ahlul Bayt were let go. Ahlul Bayt were let go. Yazid had to do that. He is a coward. He's a coward. He had to do that. He called for Imam Sajjad. Imam Sajjad came to Yazid, and Yazid told him that I am setting you free. I am setting you free. You may go wherever you want to go. Now Imam Sajjad, he's the Imam and he could make the decision for everyone right there. But Imam Sajjad knew, and in his ilm he knew, that there is that respect and honor that he had for Hazrat Zainab. And he said that, I will ask my aunt and then I will let you know. Not that easy. You want us to go? You want to free us? It's not that easy. There will be conditions here, right, for us to leave. Imagine this. Yazid wants them to go. It's Imam Sajjad is saying, no, there are going to be conditions here. Not so easy. Right? Not so easy. We were brought here without our will, that's fine. But we will leave here with our will, with our choice. This is the victory of Imam Sajjad. Imam Sajjad went to Hazrat Zainab and he told her what Yazid had mentioned. Hazrat Zainab Imagine this, you know, now they have the chance to go back. Now they have the chance to go back, and how fast do you want to leave here? How fast do you want to leave here, a place where no one has ma'rifat of you? How fast do you want to leave here? But no, Zainab doesn't want to leave so easily. He said, we won't leave like this. You know, since we have been captured and brought here like prisoners and brought here in this way that we have been, and we never had the chance to cry for Imam Hussein or to shed tears for Imam Hussein and our martyrs. No, we want to first remember the martyrs, and we want to remember my brother and cry for them and mourn for them. My friends, she said that we will first mourn here, arrange the mourning here, arrange the azadari here, so that we can cry for my brother and those who have been martyred. Now these people, when she demanded that, right away a place was made for them where the ladies would go in. Other ladies came there and they sat on the ground and they started to remember their martyrs. It is this place that the first majlis of Imam Hussein was formed, and Zainab was the one who was speaking to the ladies and telling them what is happening, what has happened in Karbala. Can you imagine that the first zakir of Hussein was Zainab Kubra? She was the first zakir of Imam Hussein, saying, doing the zikr of what happened in Karbala to the ladies, and they all began to cry. They demanded that the heads of the shuhada be given back, so that the heads were brought in. When the heads were brought in, then every mother saw the head of her child and took the head and started to cry. Layla took the head of Ali Akbar. Farwa took the head of Qasim. Umm Rabab took the head of Ali Asghar. Everyone was crying on these heads as they were coming. And then Hussein's head Zainab took in her hands and started to cry over the head of Imam Hussein. Everyone was crying over these heads. And then the person who brought the head, the soldier who brought the heads in, noticed that two of the heads were not claimed. And he said, are these two heads, they look like children. Is their mother not here? Are they orphans? Are they yatim that no one is claiming these heads? And when Zainab looked at the head, it was the heads of Onan and Muhammad. Zainab said, don't call them yatim, their mother is here. Three days they cried for Imam Hussein in Sham. 3 days that the voice of the oppression that happened to Imam Hussein was raised in Sham. And now they were ready to leave. The camels were brought. And now this time the camels are not bareback. This time the camels are not bareback camels. You know, when they were brought here, they were brought here on bareback camels. I want you to see what pain they went through coming here. This time they had saddles, they were fitted with saddles, and everyone was respectfully put on the camels, and they took their place, and Zainab made sure everyone gets on. Now Zainab was left and Imam Sajjad was left. Zainab at that point said, Sajjad, I need to do something. And she turned around and she started running. She started running. Imam Sajjad went after her. She started running. She was going towards that prison, that jail cell that they were kept in. She goes inside the jail cell. Imam Sajjad follows her. Imam Sajjad by the door stands and sees that Zainab goes and falls on the grave of Sakina. Falls on the grave of Sakina and says, Sakina, how am I going to leave you here, Sakina? Imagine the pain that Zainab is going through. Hussein had given the care of Sakina to Zainab, and now she's leaving her in Sham. He says, Sakina, how can I leave without you? Sakina, you wanted to go home. Sakina, wake up. It's time for us to go home. Ilaha illallah. May Allah give you the ajr, my friends. Today is Arbaeen. Today is Arbaeen. You know how many wishes and yearnings that these ladies had to cry for Hussein, and they couldn't get the chance to cry. Are you going to fill the tears for them? The caravan left Sham. Now in history it is said that they went to Medina, but some of the histories say that no, they had requested Noman ibn Bashir that they want to go to Medina, but they will go through Karbala. And my heart also says that after they left Karbala, in the scene that they left Karbala with on Ashura and the day after Ashura, that these ladies and everyone who was there who wanted to see their beloved ones again, just to see their graves, because the way they left them on Ashura, the day after Ashura, was that when the caravan was taken, the Umar ibn Sa'd and Shimr, they, in order to hurt them more, they took the camels on which they were riding close to the bodies of Shuhada, so that when they saw the Shuhada, their hearts would quell with pain, and that they would look at them. Zainab fell off the camel. Could not make her sit there. So when they left Karbala, they left it like that. And my heart says that they want to go back to Karbala so that they can mourn for their loved ones. Now you see, from Sham they left. They came to Karbala. It is said that the first Zair of Imam Hussein, was Jabir ibn Abdullah al-Ansari, who at that time was blind, and he came there with his servant. And in that place, you see, the Ziyarat of Arbaeen. He was there on the Arbaeen of Hussein. He was there on the Arbaeen of Hussein. When he went to the Arbaeen, he had heard about what happened to Hussein. When he came there in Karbala, the graves are just made. They were just sands on the ground, just a stone on top of the sand. This is where they are. Now when Jabir came there, he told his servant that first, he said, "You are here in Karbala." He says, "First take me to the river. Take me to Furat." So he took them to Furat. Jabir then went into Furat to take ghusl before he made the ziyarat of Hussein, before he wanted to go to Hussein. He said, "I want to make my ghusl." He went into the Furat, and as soon as he went into the Furat, as the river was flowing, he touched the water, and he said, "So you are the river that was made haram on the children of Hussein." If they could have gotten only a few drops of yours. He made his ghusl, and now he came to make the ziyarat of Hussein. And the servant was saying, "Let me take you there." He says, No, don't take me there. Hussein, I know him very well. I know Hussein very well. I am blind, that is true, but Hussein will call me to come towards him. Let Hussein call me. He said, "Assalamu alaykum ya Abu Abdullah." The servant said, "But Hussein is not here, he's dead." He said, "No, Hussein will reply to my salam." And when he said that, he heard the voice of Hussein saying, "Ya Jabir, come this way." He went to the grave, fell onto the grave, and said, "What happened to you?" "Hussein, I remember you, Hussein, when you were young, and how much your grandfather used to love you, used to kiss you, and look where you are now in front of me." He started to cry, and then he spent some time there. It is said that it's at this time when the caravan of Imam Hussein reached Karbala also. It reached Karbala, and he said, "Is someone coming?" He said, "Yes." The servant said, "Someone is coming towards us." So he says, "Let's see who wants to come and visit Hussein." It's a deserted land. There's no one there. Anyone who wants to come there would have to make a specific trip to go there. It must be someone who's coming to see Hussein. Let me go out there. So he went out, and as he went out, the first person he met, he came across, was Imam Sajjad. Imam Sajjad met Jabir, saluted him and said salam to him and thanked him for coming and visiting Imam Hussein. Thanked him for coming and visiting Imam Hussein, and then said, "Jabir, now Jabir, you have made your visit, you did your ziyarat, now go away Zahid, go away Jabir, go away from here." He said, "Why? Why should I go away? Why should I go away? Is there something wrong that I did?" He says, "No, Jabir, you haven't done anything wrong. But go away, because the haram of Hussein is here." The haram of Hussein, Zainab Kubra, is here. They're here to visit Hussein. Jabir understood. He went away from there. And it was at this time, after Karbala the first time, when the haram of Hussein came to Karbala. As they came here, the voices of their noha was being heard everywhere. No one was there to hear it. Only the angels could hear it. And now they were shrieking and crying and wailing, calling, "Wa Husayna, Wa Muhammada, look at what's happening to our..." Each and every lady fell to the ground around the grave of Hussein, and they started weeping, remembering all the musibat and all the difficulties they went through, and saying, "What is happening, Hussein?" They cried for Hussein, that, "Hussein, why? We have left you. Hussein, this is what happened." They cried their hearts out. They cried in Karbala. It said they stayed there for 3 days, maybe 1 day or 3 days. It's not clear how long, but they stayed there. After they visited the grave of Hussein, they went to the grave of Abbas, and it is there where they started to mention what happened in Kufa and Sham to Abbas. "Abbas, we will not tell this to others, but to you we will tell what happened to us." They mentioned that. And now after the morning is done, Imam Sajjad told them that now we must go back to Medina. It is time for us to go back to Medina. And they all started getting ready to go. There was one lady who was left there. One lady was left there. Zainab came to her and said, "Umm Rabab, it's time to go home." "Umm Rabab," said, "which home are you speaking of?" "My home is buried here. Hussein is here. My son Asghar is here. Why should I go back to Medina? This is home for me." Imam Sajjad came to Rubab and says, "Mother, we must go, mother. We must go, mother. Maybe Umm Rabab asked him, 'Tell me, my son, are you saying this as my son or are you saying this as my imam?'" "If you're saying this as my son, I would request you, please leave me here. But if you're saying this as my imam, I have no choice but to go with you." One by one, Imam Sajjad put these ladies in the camel so that they can leave Karbala, my friend. And then they went to Medina. Now just one last thing I will mention, their entry into Medina, and inshallah later. And you give your condolences to Imam Zamana who's crying with you. Give your condolences to the Imam of the time who's crying with you. You're not alone here, my friends. You know, it is said that when people gather to cry for Imam Hussein, that Allah sends bands and bands of angels to cry with them. From Karbala, they made it to Medina. When they were outside of Medina, they stopped the caravan. They said, send the word in that the caravan of Hussein has returned. Everyone started getting together. Everyone started gathering. They all knew what happened. And this time, it was hard for them. Now they all gathered and they all came. Noman ibn Bashir was sent and said, go and tell everyone that we are here. And these were the couplets he used. He says, O Medina, O city of the Prophet, you are not capable of being lived in anymore. Hussein has been killed in Karbala. As the caravan, when he came there, people were asking him different questions. These were people who lived here. They had friends here. They had dear ones here. You know, the children would come and ask Noman, and they would ask him, well, what about On and Muhammad? Did they come back? Youngsters would ask, did Qasim come back? Did Ali Akbar come back also? He says, no to everyone. And then one little child came and was tugging at his shirt. He looked around and saw a beautiful child that was with him. He picked him up. He says, tell me, did my father also come back? Did my father come back? He says, son, who is your father? Tell me who your father is. He says, my father is Abul Fadl al-Abbas. Noman looked at him. He says, with what face can I say that the commander has not come back? He started to cry and he let the child go. He says, no, he didn't come back. The son ran towards his grandmother, Umm al-Baneen, and he told him that my father hasn't come back. Abbas is not back. Umm al-Baneen, when as this caravan came forward and Noman was saying this, Umm al-Baneen came in the crowd and said, tell me, Noman, tell me one thing. When you say Abbas is not back, I cannot believe what you are saying. You said my Abbas was killed. I don't believe what you are saying. I know who my Abbas is. I don't believe what you're saying. Is it true? He says, yes, it's true. Then tell me one thing. Tell me one thing. Did Abbas die before or did Hussein die before him? He said, no. It was Abbas who died. When the caravan came inside and everyone parted their way, the ladies were brought in and everyone was told to go away. The first thing they did was go to the grave of Rasulullah. They went to the haram of Rasulullah and the grave of Rasulullah. They went inside there. And now Imam Sajjad requested everyone to go away from here. Requested everyone to go away from here. Everyone stepped back. Zainab was the one who went first. Zainab was given the way. She went to the grave of Rasulullah and started speaking to Rasulullah and said, Ya Rasulullah, Ya Jaddi, Wa Muhammada, what has your nation done to us? What have these people done to us? Oh, my grandfather, how can I mention it? How can I mention it? What happened with us? Ya Rasulullah, if these people were not around me, I would raise my hand and the sleeves of my hand to show you what has happened and these robes that were tied around my hands. Everyone was crying. Then all of a sudden, Zainab stood up and she went somewhere. And Imam Sajjad followed her. And all the haram followed her. And they all went there. And it was to the grave of Fatima. To the grave of Fatima. Zainab fell on the grave and said, "Mother, I miss you, mother. Mother, I have brought a gift back from Karbala. I have brought this gift for you. Take this gift." She took out the shirt of Imam Hussain and brought it to Fatima and said, "This is my gift to you." باقی میں حسین
Y'all say.